Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now, you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows for 40% off, and that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
All right, happy Friday, and we're glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to join us. Well, the president apparently is going to go live soon, and I thought this was supposed to be the big vacation when we've always known it wasn't a vacation because they're redoing the White House, and it's going to take 17 days. Everyone kept saying, well, the president is going on a 17-day vacation, and he's been working every single day this week, and obviously, North Korea is taking up a lot of his attention, and rightly so. And I'm feeling more and more confident that we're actually making some progress, showing the world that America is no longer going to, you know, sit around and allow these people to go out there and threaten the United States and threaten the free world with, well, just bribe us with more money, because that certainly hasn't worked in any way, shape, matter, or form. All right, 800-941-SEAN. By the way, you know what's amazing? I know Jeff Lord now has been fired from CNN, and I tweeted this out yesterday, and I've known Jeff for many, many years. You know who the real defenders of freedom of speech in this country are today? It's not the left anymore. The left has been co-opted by people that are obsessed with silencing every single solitary conservative voice in the country. That's it. You notice the left, whenever there is any effort, you know, when you really look at it, you know, I'm sure that there's silent agreement. They just can't come out and say it. But you never see a liberal defend conservatives and defend their ability to fight back against those that want to attack their advertiser base, these phony boycotts. It's sort of like the sun rises, the sun sets, and there's a group of people that want to get me off radio and TV and boycott me and get me fired. I've just come to accept it. It is the reality. And as long as I have the loyal support of this audience, I'll be able to stay on the air. Thank God. But do you notice that it's the left in America? They're silent. I can go back and play tapes for you that the people, when Bill Maher was under fire, I don't even like Bill Maher. I hate Bill Maher. I don't like his opinions. I don't like a show. I don't watch a show. I don't ever want to watch a show. And the same thing goes with Stephen Colbert. Remember, there was an effort. People wanted to boycott him and get him off the air. And there's all these other attempts to get others off the air. I don't want to silence anybody's voice, because I believe in freedom of speech. And I don't, you know, any effort, you know, you'll say, well, we'll just tell the advertisers. Then they start these fake robot campaigns on their differing websites. And it makes advertisers, by the way, advertisers are now hip to everything that they're doing, who they are, what they've said themselves, what they're doing. And it's sort of like the boy who cried wolf. They go at it so many different times, it just doesn't really truly work anymore. Except depending on where you might work and what the political agenda of the place you might work for. Like, I'll give you one example. CNN, for example, you know, Jeff Zucker has a personal gripe with the president, and it's obvious that it's flowing over into its programming. And the few people that they did have on the air that were conservative, there was always, you know, 8-1 during those campaign season debates, and everybody would turn to, you know, the one conservative, and it would be like 6-1, 5-1, 3-1, whatever it happened to be on that particular day, moment, or time. And it's like it doesn't matter how bizarre, how awful what the left says is always tolerable. There's no standard of decency that they're applying to each side equally. They just want to silence conservative voices. And every prominent conservative voice that you know has now come under fire and been under attack. And it's going to continue to be that way because this is the environment we live in. But when Bill Maher was under attack, it was people like me and Rush Limbaugh that said, don't fire him. When Colbert was under attack, I tweeted, don't fire Colbert. I'm not going to be a part of this. And people were mad at me on Twitter, conservative, other conservatives, and this is our chance to get him back. What are you doing? I'm like, I'm not threatened by any of these people. I'm not threatened by MSNBC's opinions. I don't even really think we're competing against MSNBC in the sense that I don't know how many people share audience between Fox and MSNBC, but they've got their audience that loves conspiracy theories and conspiracy TV, and they like to get literally hyped up every night with breathless reporting that the president's on the verge of getting impeached, and he's not. And they go out there, and the audience thinks, this is the night. It's going to happen tonight. We got him. I mean, it just doesn't happen. I don't think I'm competing for the same audience. And time after time after time, we've been right and they've been wrong. But do you notice, how is it that people, conservatives, defend guys like Maher and guys, you know, and defend the right of NBC to program whatever garbage they want to program? And Colbert to do whatever he wants to do and say whatever he wants to say. And if people make mistakes and they apologize, unless it's a consistent, horrible pattern of virulently racist and anti-Semitic, you know, material, then I think, do you not give somebody a right like Congress to revise and extend their remarks and give an honest apology and followed up by a change in their behavior? That doesn't exist today. It's an immediate opportunity that they want to silence people. We as conservatives and media, we have now lived for years. There are people right now that are paid, that will transcribe every word I say. It's happened every day for years and years and years and years and years and years. They are being funded by very wealthy left-wingers. And we now know who they are, how much they've donated, who they've donated to, and what they're all about. But in a way, that's the environment if you're a conservative you work in. And the liberals that are on air, you know, the funny part to me is they don't realize these things can all work in reverse. Now, I'll be the one out here championing freedom of speech. But, you know, when different things... When conservatives start saying, okay, if that's how it's going to be, we're going to play by the same rules, and they start fighting back, like Melanie Morgan and Brian Maloney did, then, I mean, in that sense, it becomes one big no freedom of speech, stifling of freedom of speech, thought, expression. You know, same thing's happening on college campuses. I don't know. I would just prefer to be in a class. I'll never forget when I went to NYU. There was a guy that started a political science class, I'm pretty sure with Alan Combs, I had him on Hannity, and I remember he started the class, I'm a Marxist, I'm a communist, hated Reagan, and I was a student during the Reagan years, and I started defending Reagan after I got a great midterm grade. I ended up with the lowest grade I ever had in college, I think it was C+, because the guy hated my politics. And the guy was so fixated and focused on that skinny guy in the back at the time, which was me, that's all he did. He came in and we fought all day, and everybody in the class was rolling their eyes because that's all I cared about was politics. Even then, it was a love and it was a passion. Very trying times. It is. It's sort of like how I feel about we don't have equal justice under the law. Why have I spent so much time pointing out that what Hillary Clinton did with her emails was a crime? What Hillary Clinton, by mishandling classified information, putting it in a mom and pop shop bathroom, that's a crime. That's illegal. Ended up being hacked, we're told, 99.9% certainty by foreign intel organizations, foreign agencies. And when I talk about subpoenaed emails, 33,000 deleted, and the flimsy excuse is it's about a wedding, funeral, yoga, and emailing her husband who doesn't do email. Okay, I don't believe it. I think if a conservative did it, it's obstruction. And if the conservative acid washed, bleach bit it clean so you can't recover them, well, that would seem like obstruction. Or if you send the FBI devices that don't have SIM cards, that seems like, you know, obstruction. And if somebody breaks up devices with hammers, be it BlackBerries or iPhones or the IT guy in the Wasserman Schultz case, as reported, he had government property in his garage, including hard drives smashed. Well, that would seem to me to be a good, strong case to look into for obstruction. It was like Russian collusion with Uranium One, just like election interference with Ukraine and the paid DNC operative who the Politico reports back to the Hillary campaign and the DNC, just like the unmasking of General Flynn and Samantha Powers unmasking, what, hundreds of people during an election year? Why would a U.N. ambassador ever do that? We've had hundreds, actually a 350% increase, according to Circa.com and Sarah Carter and John Solomon, in unmasking during an election season. Okay, why? How many of those happen to deal with the Trump administration? A very high number. So it's almost like we're criminalizing in many ways political differences. The left doesn't have a tolerance for free expression of ideas. Doesn't matter if it's on college campus or cable TV, or they've always hated conservative dominance of talk radio. And that's why everybody in talk radio at some point in their career is going to be targeted if they haven't been already. And even now they're going after local hosts on a regular basis. And people are losing their jobs. And there are some people that get very, very, very skittish. And I just got to tell you, it's not good for the country. And people think that this is a real good thing for the, it's not good for the country. Because we are stifling thought expression. One of the things I'm most worried about now with, I'm thinking we don't even have equal justice under the law. I'm worried about where are the liberals and libertarians on unmasking, surveillance unmasking, and leaking raw intelligence on American citizenry. Well, that is, you know, politicizing the tools of that we literally have entrusted to those brave men and women that are out there every day on the front lines that are gathering intelligence on American enemies. Now, the 99.9% are great. But when you hear that unmasking increases and then, you know, intel leaks perhaps by the general counsel of the FBI, which there's reports of an investigation, and Susan Rice an investigation, and Ben Rhodes an investigation, and a UN ambassador an investigation. Wow, that's kind of scary. You know, there are certain things that you would wish, you would hope that there can be consensus on. You know, my criticism of Hillary taking money from Sharia countries. How many times did I say this? During the campaign, the millions and millions, I put it up on the screen on TV regularly. She's taking money from countries that abuse women, mistreat them. Women can't drive. They're told how to dress. They can't leave the house or the country without a male permission. That you have gays and lesbians being killed as a matter of law in these countries. You would think these are fundamental things that human beings with a conscience and soul agree on. But you can't even find agreement on that. No liberal criticized Hillary for taking that money. Very few did. Or the persecution of Christians and Jews. And it's all things I talked about during the campaign. There's certain you would think is an area of agreement. Even on North Korea, which is a clear and present danger to every man, woman, and child. You know, at some point, it really doesn't matter that Bill Clinton made a horrible deal. At some point, we got to deal with the reality, and that is somebody unhinged that keeps saber-rattling, firing missiles, has nuclear weapons that can now reach New York City and Boston. It's a little more serious than petty political differences, to be honest. It puts everything in perspective. You know, radical Islamist Kim Jong-un doesn't care if he kills a liberal, a conservative, a Republican, a Democrat. He just hates America, and he hates, you know, keeps saber-rattling and pushing the world to the brink here. All right, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. All right, as we roll along on a Friday, two of our big stories today, North Korea and the battle, Mitch McConnell and the president, Donald Trump. I also think the president might be speaking at some point today. I thought he was on vacation. I thought he was resting. I thought he wasn't, you know, was supposed to be out playing golf and having fun. Apparently, he's been working all day, every day this week. One last thought on this. You know who talked about the forgotten men and women in this country this year? You know who's talking about the forgotten men and women now? It's not the left. You know, they've always said they have a monopoly of compassion on the poor and the elderly and the disabled. Every 4 years, it's the same old playbook. Republicans are racist, sexist, homophobic, Islamophobic, xenophobic. I can't even remember all the phobias, but it's the same thing every 4 years, actually every 2 years. And I've gone back and I've given the history and the examples of this many, many times. You know, if the left really cared about the poor in this country, they would look at Obama's economic failure and they'd say, this didn't work. If with all their resistance, not one Democrat will ever consider helping Donald Trump on health care, in spite of the biggest lie ever told, keep your doctor plan and save on average per family $2,500 a year. It was reported yesterday, 6.5 million Americans are paying the fine. And how many, you know, on average, $6,000-$8,000 a year premium increases, you know, depending on what state you're living in. Some states, this average this year was up 30%. Projected average increase next year, 30%. Oh, a lot of good resisting, fixing Obamacare is doing for the American people. Now, 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty. Real people, real lives, real suffering. Just like real sexism, real prejudice against Christians, Jews, gays, and lesbians, Sharia countries that give Hillary money. Such hypocrisy of the left, and they don't support the free speech movement either.
Sean Hannity.
All right, the president, who we were told all week is on vacation, shockingly working another day. He doesn't like to take off. I even asked him about that in my first interview that I had with him when he became president. Let's go to him. He's in New Jersey. We're playing this from the top. He just came out about a minute and a half ago.
Secretary DeVos, for joining us today. And thank you all, because we have been working very hard on being sure that Americans have the training they need for the jobs in the future. I also want to thank Ivanka, my daughter, for her leadership on workforce training and her efforts. She's been working very, very hard to create new economic opportunities for women across America and actually for women across the world. She's been working with the Chancellor of Germany on helping women all over the world. In the past 7 months, we've made enormous gains in getting Americans back to work. The stock market is at record highs. Unemployment is at a 16-year low. And manufacturers have never expressed more optimism about the future. The optimism has been truly incredible. Recently, Foxconn announced that it's going to invest $10 billion to build a new factory in Wisconsin. We want to make sure that every job that comes back to our shores is filled with American workers. We have a lot of companies moving back to our country. You're probably seeing that two major automobile companies just announced they're moving back to the United States, and they're going to build major plants. They're looking for the site. They're putting it out to 7 or 8 different states, and they're going to be very happy building in the United States. It's going to work out very well for them. That's why in June we began a historic initiative to expand apprenticeship and workforce training programs in all industries. We're expanding pathways to success, so important. And apprenticeships are one of the many avenues that lead to the great jobs completely debt-free. And who knows more about the word apprentice than Donald Trump? In fact, under the apprenticeship, you earn while you learn. So important and so great. And you love getting up in the morning and going to work, and a lot of great things involved here. We're also here today to discuss additional steps we will be taking to expand apprenticeship programs, especially for women and minorities in STEM fields where women have been truly underrepresented, really, I guess you could say, underrepresented for many, many decades. Technology has become a part of nearly every industry, from manufacturing to retail. And we want all of our citizens, every single citizen, including women and minorities, to have access to high-paying tech jobs and other STEM-related jobs. American workers are the best there is anywhere in the world, and we're finding work for them. They built the skyscrapers of our cities, the roads and bridges across our land, and we'll be building plenty of new roads and bridges, by the way. The technology that has revolutionized the globe, and so much more, as you're well aware. Their skills, talent, and grit have always put America on top, and we're going to remain on top, but at a much higher level than we are right now. And speaking of now, it is our job to make sure that they have the training immediately to lead us into the future. We have great, great hope. We have a great, great future in this country. There's never been more optimism. And again, unemployment at a 16-year low. So we're honored to have all of you. Mr. Secretary, thank you very much. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And Ivanka, congratulations on working so hard.
Thank you.
We really do appreciate it. Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. President, what do you mean by military solutions are locked and loaded as it relates to North Korea?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. We are looking at that very carefully. I hope that they are going to fully understand the gravity of what I said. And what I said is what I mean. So hopefully they'll understand, Peter, exactly what I said and the meaning of those words. Those words are very, very easy to understand.
Any progress on the diplomatic back channel?
Well, we don't want to talk about progress. We don't want to talk about back channels. We want to talk about a country that has misbehaved for many, many years, decades, actually, through numerous administrations, and they didn't want to take on the issue, and I have no choice but to take it on, and I'm taking it on, and we'll either be very, very successful quickly, or we're going to be very, very successful in a different way quickly.
Angela Merkel says she sees no military solution to fight with North Korea. Why is she wrong?
Well, I think maybe she's speaking for Germany. Let her speak for Germany. She's a friend of mine. She's a very good person, very good woman. She's a friend of Ivanka. Perhaps she's referring to Germany. She's certainly not referring to the United States, that I can tell you.
Mr. President, you've said you wanted to send a strong message to North Korea. What do you say to your critics who say that your rhetoric is actually raising the tension?
Well, you know, my critics are only saying that because it's me. If somebody else uttered the exact same words that I uttered, they'd say, what a great statement, what a wonderful statement. They're only doing it, but I will tell you, we have tens of millions of people in this country that are so happy with what I'm saying, because they're saying, finally, we have a president that's sticking up for our nation and, frankly, sticking up for our friends and our allies. And this man will not get away with what he's doing, believe me. And if he utters one threat in the form of an overt threat, which, by the way, he has been uttering for years, and his family has been uttering for years, or if he does anything with respect to Guam or any place else that's an American territory or an American ally, he will truly regret it, and he will regret it fast. Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, that's the president. And again, if he does anything in respect to Guam or any of our allies or the United States, he will regret it and regret it immediately. And he didn't want any ambiguity. And he wouldn't speak about any potential diplomatic solution or back channeling or and just dismissed whatever Angela Merkel had said. I hadn't seen those comments earlier today. Well, maybe she's speaking for Germany. Let her speak for Germany, which that's exactly right. She can speak for Germany. She's not elected here. But this is just the truth. I mean, Kim Jong-un, his father, grandfather before him, I mean, they have been not part of the world community. Their people live in utter poverty and misery, but yet they have enough money for all this nuclear technology, all the weaponry that they're launching and saber rattling that they're doing. And the president went on to say, either way, we are going to be successful. Either we'll know very quickly whether it's going to work, whether it's not going to work. And this, a lot of people, oh, Mr. President, you're being strong with them. Well, certainly being weak and trying to bribe them and appeasing them, that didn't work. And the president did say on Friday in a reference to American weapons as being locked and loaded. And he's been very, very clear that military solutions, as he said, are fully in place, locked and loaded, should North Korea act unwisely. Which, by the way, is there any American that doesn't want their country defended if, God forbid, something happens? Is it not a good thing to let a madman know that there are going to be consequences, severe consequences for his actions? And Trump wrote on Twitter that, you know, a day after his defense secretary said the U.S. was ready to counter any threat from Pyongyang. Mad Dog Mattis. So locked and loaded, ready to defend this country, ready to defend the United States. You know, you have, I don't know what his position is, in whether, I guess the Guam Homeland Security team and secretary issued a fact sheet on, you know, don't look at a flash or a fireball. Well, that's not reminiscent of the Cold War and kids in school practicing getting underneath their desks. I don't know what is. But, you know, even the New York Times had a piece out today. Not that I'm particularly fond of the New York Times at all. Wrestling with North Korea, Trump finds perilous options. The options are not great. Actually, in the next hour, this has always been a topic of interest. It's the stuff of spy novels and, you know, over the years, you've heard about electromagnetic pulse and, issues like this. And the fascinating thing about it is it really is a possibility. And it's something, if you look at the history of it, it's pretty fascinating. It's more for me a topic of interest, but it's also, you know, a real threat. We're going to have somebody who's studied and written books on it join us later in the program. Newt Gingrich is also going to join us. He actually said something today. I rarely disagree with Newt, but he said something about the president and his comments about Mitch McConnell, which I found genuine and sincere, expressing a frustration about Mitch McConnell and how they can't get a 7.5-year promise done and the expectations are too high. I mean, it just sounded so swampy to me. I don't, pretty amazing. So on the other front, as it relates to North Korea, we've got thousands of North Korea's top military officials marching in support of Kim Jong-un as if they had any choice, with Pyongyang warning it could reduce the U.S. mainland to ashes at any moment. Well, now we know they're full of crap, but Mad Dog Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, he's saying that the solution is in place to address it, and they're on the same page. And you got the U.S. and Japanese troops now beginning joint military exercises amid this threat. Chinese newspaper has weighed in and says China should stay neutral if North Korea attacks first. That was pretty interesting. Basically signaling to North Korea, you're on your own. Warning both, you know, asking the United States not to do this. And telling North Korea, we don't have your back here. We're not getting involved in your stupid war. You know, we've got to, you know, look, who wants nuclear war? Who wants incineration? Who wants thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands more to die? What? No rational person, as insane as some of the former Soviet Union leaders were, they understood mutually assured destruction. I'm not sure that this guy understands this. I really am not. I think the president has been so on his game lately as it relates to both McConnell. And here's my take. This is where we'll get into this with Newt at the top of the next hour. But I watched the president, guys, 7.5 years. And then you say when you can't pass it, oh, I'm giving up and I'm moving on. That's not how the real world works for most people. You don't get to say to your boss, OK, I'm going to get this done in 7.5 hours, and then say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going home now. That doesn't work. Oh, I meant to bring up one other point on Guam. Those North Korean missiles can reach Guam in 14 minutes. It's pretty scary. We better beef up our missile defense system. And now, you know, now you're talking about an escalation, an arms race that's probably going to emerge in the region as a result of all of this. And that's not good for anybody that cares about human life. That then becomes an unmitigated disaster. And I can see that, I just don't see that anything is going to end well here. The options are so bad unless Kim Jong-un backs down. We have some other news today. One thing is the president's approval rating, as he's been working his whole vacation, has now taken another big jump. Last Friday, Rasmussen showed Trump at 39%. Now he's at 45%. That's matching the Zogby poll that came in this week. Everyone in the media, oh, he's down. They won't report, I guess, when he's up. Now, we also have the, remember this author of this anti-Trump dossier, you know, the infamous discredited anti-Trump dossier, the guy that James Comey wanted to hire, that was used, apparently we're being told, as a blueprint for Robert Mueller's Russiagate investigation, is now being sued for libel. Lawyers for the British author of the intelligence dossier at the center of this controversy are fighting an effort to force him into a deposition in connection with a libel suit stemming from BuzzFeed's publication of the salacious document. Now, the attorneys for this British MI6 intelligence officer, Christopher Steele, asked a federal judge in Miami not to grant the request. Steele's lawyers filed a motion a couple of hours after a district court judge issued a formal request for Steele's testimony. Anyway, the request was signed by the judge, sealed by the court clerk. It's unclear if it was formally delivered, but obviously it's a possibility. That would be a good thing. Just like Fusion GPS, they need to start talking too. Well, what else do we got here today? GOP House member wants to grill Mueller in an open hearing. That's pretty interesting development. Anyway, Texas Republican Brian Babin wants to do that. You got a former Mueller deputy predicting Trump is going down. Well, I mean, it's 8-0 Democratic donors and Hillary's attorney to no Republicans. Anyway, the guy's name is Phil Mudd, served as deputy director of the FBI under Mueller. Let me give you one bottom line as a former government official. Government is going to kill this guy, he said. Oh, he said it on the fake news network, CNN. The judge who authorized Mueller's grand jury helped a Hillary aide hide, helped Hillary hide her emails. We got another conflict of interest with this Beryl Howell. So you have 8 Democratic donors, no Republican donors, and now the judge worked for the Senate Judiciary and helped Hillary. Let's see, what else do we got? I guess that's about it for now. All right, we'll have Newt Gingrich when we get back. Our two top stories today that we're really following, and then we'll get into the electronic magnetic pulse issue, and Newt Gingrich is going to join us, and much more. 800-941-SHAWN. Also an author that has taken some shots at me. People saying, you're not having enough opposition on Hannity. We'll get to that. All right, as we roll along on a Friday, bomb shelter sales, Washington Examiner, booming in California. Well, Jonathan Turley blasting Mueller for his pre-dawn raid. Very troubling, very gratuitous, very excessive. Yeah, you think? In the Paul Manafort case. Newt Gingrich, when we get back, and electromagnetic pulse. What is it? We'll explain.
I'm going to ask for a show of hands, but I know everybody's saying we've been there, haven't done anything, which I find extremely irritating. And I'm going to tell you why. Congress goes on for 2 years, and part of the reason I think that the storyline is that we haven't done much is because, in part, the president and others have set these early timelines about things need to be done by a certain point. Now, our new president had, of course, not been in this line of work before, and I think had excessive expectations about how quickly things happen in the democratic process. And so part of the reason I think people feel like we're underperforming is because too many kind of artificial deadlines, unrelated to the reality of the complexity of legislating, may not have been fully understood. And of course, our political adversaries would love to say that anytime. So what I'm asking of you is to judge this Congress when it finishes. How much have we done to make America competitive again and to grow again? And that's part of America, making America great again, which is what the president talks about so much.
Relationship with Senator McConnell.
I just want him to get repeal and replace done. I've been hearing repeal and replace now for 7 years, but I've only been doing this for 2 years, and I've really only been doing this for 6 months, but I've been running. So now it's almost 2 years, and all I hear is repeal and replace. And then I get there, and I said, where's the bill? I want to sign it first day, and they don't have it. And they passed repeal and replace, but they never had a president, frankly, or a Senate. that was going to do it, but they never had a president, so it didn't matter. So I say very simply, where is repeal and replace? Now I want tax reform and tax cuts. We're going to reduce taxes for the people. We pay more tax than anybody in the world, and we're going to reduce taxes. So I say tax cuts, tax reform, and I want a very big infrastructure bill where we're working on that very hard already, and we can do that. And we may even get bipartisan on infrastructure, but we want to have it. But I said, Mitch, get to work and let's get it done. They should have had this last one done. They lost by one vote. For a thing like that to happen is a disgrace. And frankly, it shouldn't have happened. That I can tell you. It shouldn't have happened.
Senator McConnell considered stepping down as majority leader. There's some conservative analysts, including Sean Hannity, say it's time for him to retire.
Well, I'll tell you what, if he doesn't get repeal and replace done, and if he doesn't get taxes done, meaning cuts and reform, and if he doesn't get a very easy one to get done, infrastructure, if he doesn't get them done, then you can ask me that question.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show, as we continue our top two stories today, the battle between the president, the Senate Majority Leader, and the ongoing hostilities and threats going back and forth with North Korea. Former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, is with us. Mr. Speaker, there you have excessive expectations versus get the job done. And Mitch McConnell saying, well, now we're going to move on to other things. He just basically threw up his hands after that last vote on health care. I guess... I was surprised to read that you said on our friend Maria's show this morning you disagree with all of the strategy. What does that mean?
Well, first of all, there were 16 Democrats voting no for every Republican. So if people want to get mad, the first place to look is the 48 Democrats, and in particular, the 10 Democrats who are from states Trump carried, including somebody who's from a state that is 68% pro-Trump. So I start with the idea, I mean, Ronald Reagan would have figured out the real opponent were the Democrats.
But second, they didn't promise to repeal and replace. The Republicans did.
And you got 49 out of 52, and people then attack, quote, the Republicans. Well, if I'm one of the 49, I'm standing there going, wait a second. I did everything I could, including trying to carry these three guys who wouldn't go with me. But the deeper thing here is presidents have to focus on being effective as a team. One of the reasons I spoke out today is the president's gotten this cycle now of what Mitch has to do. He has to do. The president's not an owner sitting up in a box somewhere. The president's the biggest player on the field. We need to get back to using the words we. What is it that we have to get done? How is it that we failed? Because we all failed. It wasn't just Mitch McConnell. Every single one of us who wanted to repeal it failed. So what do we learn from that, and how do we move on as a team? And I'm saying this stuff as strongly as I do because I lived through the Reagan years. I lived through the contract years. I know, and I lived through years when Republicans failed. And Republicans fail when they decide to commit civil war against themselves, and they forget that the Democrats are the opponents, and they forget what the real source of the problem is. The real source of the problem is not Mitch McConnell. The real source of the problem is Chuck Schumer and 48 Democrats who spent all spring and summer trying to screw up this administration every single way they could.
And they were successful, but, you know, I rarely disagree with you. I mean, and I'm listening very closely for clues because I know you so well. And with all due respect, I don't think we can compare this Republican Party to the Newt Gingrich Party in 95 and 94 that had a vision that actually made promises and kept promises. A president like Reagan, you know, it was very successful at legislating, but this is from, let me give you my perspective, and I really want to dig into this and get your answer, and I want to listen, and I want an answer, because I want these things solved, because the country needs it. You know, I watched Donald Trump yesterday. This is what I sensed. I sensed a real sincerity in him. I saw the guy that was the real person, being totally blunt and honest, not understanding how people can promise something for 7.5 years, and they have the majority, and then seemingly have zero really big ideas. I mean, what they failed on was the skinny repeal, which was nothing like repeal and replace as they promised. They don't have urgency. McConnell seemed to accept failure by saying, let's move on. And then McConnell lecturing the president first, in fairness to President Trump, about, well, he's not from here. He's not, you know, I'm a bit irritated over this. He doesn't understand the complexities of of legislating, and I'm like, really? This is 9 months into the guy's presidency, and you guys are 8 years into this promise. This is ridiculous.
Well, look, I'm not going to defend what Mitch said the other day. I think it was unwise, and I think looking back, he probably agrees it was unwise. But I just want to point out, okay, you're at a point in time when the objective fact is you're three votes short.
Okay.
Now, one way to react is decide, let's find some way to attack ourselves. So we're now going to have a huge fight, for example, taking on Flake in Arizona, because, boy, we'll sure teach him. Well, we could also end up losing the seat. We're going to really have a big fight with Heller in Nevada. We'll teach him. By the way, both these guys voted for repeal. But we're going to teach him. I see these conservative groups already out raising money. Good chance to then lose the seat. We're going to be back where we were for the last few years, except now it'll be Schumer instead of Harry Reid as the majority leader. I don't think that helps Trump. I don't think that helps the country.
Listen, I'm not disagreeing that we got to come to an answer here. The only thing I will say is that I'll concede a point to you. I agree. Of course, we can always go back and blame the Democrats. But give us the House, give us the Senate, give us the presidency. We'll do this. There's not one Democrat, not even those from states that Donald Trump won, that ever made that promise.
Right.
And nor do I think any of them are – it's a hopeless party at this point. I mean, Joe Manchin, I know, has been reached out to time and time again, and he is absolutely impossible to deal with. At the end of the day, well, Chuck Schumer and the Democrats control him.
But the fact is, to the degree that that's true, then there is a long game, and the long game is called the 2018 election. And you go to the country and you say, you know, we have a couple of people who are weak.
Yeah.
So our 52 votes really isn't reliable. We need to be at 56 or 58. Who are we going to beat so we can get to 56 or 58?
Is this, for the average person out there that's heard since 2010, give us the House, we'll repeal and replace. No. Give us the House and Senate, we'll repeal and replace. Give us the House, Senate, the White House, we'll repeal and replace. Give us the House, Senate, the presidency, but now we need 58 votes, and then we'll repeal and replace. And I'll tell you why I don't believe that's true. Is, you know, there were 60 votes in the House to repeal and replace Obamacare, the show votes. They never used the power of the purse. That was an early indication they didn't mean it. There were 100 House Republicans that we learned didn't have any intention of doing that. And then we also learned that even the senators that voted for a straight repeal bill in 2015, three of them that voted for, well, actually more, there was like six of them that voted for the straight repeal bill in 2015. They didn't mean it either, because when they had their shot to get it passed, they didn't mean it either. And they voted against the straight repeal.
You're not irritating me. I mean, this is actually a very important, I think very healthy conversation, not just between you and me, but for the entire conservative movement. Okay? We're faced with the reality that people who had a good press release when it came down to being real legislation suddenly discovered, oh, this is really a lot harder than we thought it was. And that's really what happened.
But you were always politically courageous. And let's be honest. I mean, you got the House for the first time in 40 years with a vision, a strong, active, participating, you know, contract, bold and aggressive. You did your job. You kept
right.
Your word. Well, why don't the Republicans just do that now? Until January 1st?
They should. But my point is, when you say that, Sean, it has to include the president. The word we is really, really important here. I went out, and you're right. We put together, it took us 24 years because you were there and you saw it. And it took us 16 years after I got elected.
And I loved it. It was a great time.
But remember, I went to every moderate and I said we. I went to every conservative and I said we. And I worked very hard to make sure that we were on the same team.
So I should say, Mitch, can we work together pretty please with Trigger on?
Exactly.
Is that what you're telling me?
Yes. It's not as much fun as being angry.
I'm not angry.
What I want is effectiveness. I want effectiveness, not emotion. I want a president.
You know what's fascinating about this? We so rarely disagree. And
oh, I know.
And I know you're deep down as pissed off as I am, except I'm just more blunt about it, and I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I know you. I know you too well.
The biggest difference isn't how, and I agree, I'm probably at least as frustrated as you are because I'm older than you. I've been doing this longer than you have, and it drives me crazy I watch the Republican Party forget every single lesson that we learned from Reagan and every lesson we learned from the contract, and I'm very worried they're going to do the same thing on the tax bill.
Right.
And so, trust me, I mean, my fuse is very short, but here's what tempers my voice. The key is to be effective.
Okay, let's talk about
I want to know what's going to get the job done, not what's going to make me feel good.
Do you have extra time today? You're busy? Because I got to keep you for one quick segment. Do you want to stay another half hour or no?
No, I can't stay. I'll
stay
for a quick segment. I just have to go.
All right, quick break. We'll come back. Final thoughts with Newt Gingrich. Don't forget his book on Amazon.com. It's been now, 10 or 11 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. It's called Understanding Trump. We'll get his take on North Korea when we get back. Right, as we continue with former Speaker of the House, author of the New York Times bestselling book, almost 3 months now on the bestseller list, Understanding Trump, Newt Gingrich is with us. All right, I know we don't have more time, but this is a discussion that I think we're going to have moving forward. And I'll concede this to you. Blessed are the peacemakers. You shall inherit, I believe, the earth, because that's you. That's not me now.
Well, let's plan Monday to get back on this topic, and I'll come back on the show if you want me to.
I do. But I'd be negligent if I didn't ask you about North Korea. Mm-hmm. And I do like the president's strength. I like his resolve. It is such a refreshing difference from the appeasement policies that got us here, and that means Bill Clinton.
He has done exactly the right thing. It's a perfect example. There's a teamwork underway. You see General Mattis, General Kelly. You see General McMaster. You see Tillerson. And you see the UN Ambassador Nikki Haley. The whole team is moving in the right direction. I think what the president's been saying needs to be as vivid and as clear as he has been. I think this is a critical period for us. I did write my newsletter today, which people can get for free at GingrichProductions.com, on what is the value of an American city. I think we have to take very seriously what's at stake with nuclear weapons. And I'm going to be writing several newsletters the next week on what we need to do to have a much deeper and more effective defense system against nuclear weapons. But I think the president's moving in exactly the right direction, and he's doing it as a team, and they're mutually reinforcing. When the president says something strong in rhetoric, Mattis comes along and says, by the way, we can back it up militarily and make it happen.
All right, based on our earlier discussion and based on what you're saying here, I mean, have you spoken with the president? Have you spoken with Mitch McConnell? I mean, I think you would be the perfect person to bring the team together. I wouldn't be that person.
Well, look, I don't think I am in a position
to
try to broker between two people who are extraordinarily powerful personalities. These guys are adults. They'll figure this out and get around to it.
You think so? Do you think that by December, by January, do you think we'll get a bill to fund the border wall? Do you think we'll get the president's economic plan passed? Do you think we'll get some version of their promise repeal and replace? And do you think we'll get everything we need to get energy jobs up and moving, which I think will be the single greatest asset?
That's what I think is the biggest focus of the near future. I've been talking with the White House, with the House and the Senate. I am very concerned because, as I said earlier, I can imagine these guys sliding back and making the same mistakes with the tax bill that they made with the health bill. You cannot do something that is too complicated and get it done. We don't have the right size majority. We don't have the right communications capability. They need to have a simple, clean, clear tax cut.
It would have been nice if they were ready for it, but I guess that's in retrospect.
But they weren't, and the same thing's true here. They need a simple, clean tax cut by Thanksgiving if they're going to get the economy growing enough next year to win the election.
All right, we'll have you back next week. Mr. Speaker, congrats on the book. Have a great weekend.
Talk to you soon.
800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program.
The show 24/7. Download it to your iPod. Be a Hannity insider at Hannity.com.
And I will tell you this, if North Korea does anything in terms of even thinking about attack, the of anybody that we love or we represent or our allies or us, they can be very, very nervous. I'll tell you what, and they should be very nervous because things will happen to them like they never thought possible, okay? He's been pushing the world around for a long time, and I have great respect for what China and what Russia did and those 15, we got a 15 to nothing vote. I have great respect for China and Russia, what they did on sanctions. I believe that will have an effect. I don't think it will have the kind of effect, even though I was the one, we were the ones that got it. And Nikki Haley did a great job. We all did a great job. But I have great respect for what they did. I have great respect for the 15 to nothing. But probably it will not be as effective as a lot of people think it can be, unfortunately. I think China can do a lot more, yes. China can. And I think China will do a lot more. Look, we have trade with China. We lose hundreds of billions of dollars a year on trade with China. They know how I feel. It's not going to continue like that. But if China helps us, I feel a lot differently for trade. A lot differently for trade. So we will do, I think, the people of our country are safe, our allies are safe, and I will tell you this, North Korea better get their act together or they're going to be in trouble like few nations ever have been in trouble in this world, okay?
All right, 24 now till the top of the hour. The president speaking out about North Korea, and so he's insinuating his words may start something horrible.
And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, really, guys? Is, you know, we tried to bribe the guy. Bill Clinton assured us this is a good deal for the American people. They're never, ever going to get nuclear weapons. And lo and behold, we're here today, just like I'm telling you, we're going to be here tomorrow, somewhere down the line with Iran and that horrible Obama deal, $150 billion to mullahs. But of course, they get 25 days inspections notice, not by Americans either, and they get to continue to spin their centrifuges, just like North Korea was able to keep their the nuclear rods that are needed and necessary to make nuclear weapons. And by the way, Hillary gave 20% of our plutonium to Putin and Russia, but that's not a conspiracy in any way. You know, as we've been talking about in the last few days, I've been telling everybody and asking generals and people in the know, is there any good answer here? And many people that I know, love, and respect, and people that have been in warfare and studied warfare their entire lives all say there really isn't any good answer. I mean, even under a best-case scenario, if Kim Jong-un is dedicating himself to creating mass destruction and continues to saber-rattle and continues to build his ICBMs and the world can't face such a threat, and if the world has to act, then we find ourselves in the difficult, precarious position of having to act, even if China joins us. Now, China has said, North Korea, you are on your own if you strike first. They've also saying to the United States, urging us not to do it either. But if, in fact, something happens or we feel that this guy is too unbalanced to have missile technology, ICBM capability, married to nuclear weapons, especially weapons with a range that could reach New York City or Boston, and we feel that we have to act, and China joins us, and Israel joins us, and even Russia joins us, and Western European allies join us, okay, then, okay, what are we going to do? Okay, you're going to incinerate North Korea. Does he launch weapons at Guam, South Korea, Seoul, China, and Japan before our weapons actually even get there? Does he have any pre-strike plan in place if he senses he's under attack? And what is the nuclear fallout? Now, there's another scenario as well. The former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, was talking on TV the other night that, okay, you know, if three nuclear weapons, if in fact they ever exploded just above the United States, in the atmosphere of the United States, well, the U.S., Canada, would be vulnerable to a catastrophic attack. In other words, there is the possibility an electromagnetic pulse. And I just, out of sheer interest over the years, and they've been the subject of spy novels and doomsday novels, etc., but just launched from the atmosphere, an electromagnetic pulse would literally shut down the electric grid in this country, dismantle every appliance, water systems, food distribution, and much more, but not just for hours, not just for days, but for weeks, months, and the possibility even longer. Anyway, a person that has caught my interest, he works with the Toronto Sun, he's a columnist, Anthony Furies,
is with us, and he actually wrote the book about Pulse Attack, the real story behind the secret weapon that can destroy North America. How are you?
Hey, Sean, I'm great. Great to be back on the program.
Do you get come under fire for writing and talking about these things, or do people find it as interesting as I do?
Well, I get under a little bit of fire because you're right to, when you tee it up, saying people have written spy novels and it's in a couple movies like a James Bond and an Ocean's 11. So people think it's science fiction. They think it's entirely relegated to the tinfoil hat brigade. And I got to be honest, I sort of kind of did when I first started researching this, Sean. And then I found out why I thought that way.
By the way, so did I. I thought it was nut talk, totally, completely off the rails when I first heard about it.
Well, and the reason that's the case is because it's been classified information, so all the serious people haven't been able to talk about it. What happened is back in the 60s, both the U.S. and Russia were doing their atmospheric tests, and they were doing them atmospherically, not because they wanted to do them in the atmosphere, because you can't detonate them on the ground. You're going to create a big crater. But when they did this, they launched them up in the sky, and then they realized 500 kilometers away, various sort of street lamps and so forth went out and short-circuited. And they thought, hang on a second, and they sent technicians to have a look, and they thought, uh-oh, there's a connection here. And they realized you detonate one of these up in the atmosphere, sends a big high-energy waveform around that can fry pretty much all electronics. JFK brings in the Partial Test Ban Treaty in the early 60s, which I think we can agree is pretty much a good thing. The downside is it halted you being able to do that, learn more primary source information. So that's what shut it all down, Sean, and that's why when it gets classified and when you can't do more tests, it's not really, you know, a sexy thing to do your PhD and you can't get any funding to, you know, pay your mortgage on and so forth. So kind of a cone of silence goes around
it. So this was something that the former Soviet Union and the United States were testing and maybe still kind of behind the scenes are working on that we just don't know about?
Well, yeah, exactly. In my book, Pulse Attack, I talk about how Kazakhstan actually had one detonated against them. When they were part of the USSR, Russia thought, oh, we'll do a test over Kazakhstan, see what happens. They got rid of all the electronics there. They fried so many of them. They even took out part of the power grid. So when there are these rogue state actors, Iran, North Korea, they're looking around. They're going, wow, this is kind of great asymmetrical warfare here. The basic idea that we could maybe, just us, little North Korea, Kim Jong-un, we could take out all of the eastern seaboard in the U.S. and Canada and so forth. That's an amazing power to have.
Yeah, well, I think so. All right. So describe the threat that might exist for the U.S. In other words, is it a possibility? In other words, Newt Gingrich was talking about he wants a strategic defense initiative that has the redundancy of, let's say, the North Koreans. God forbid they launch an ICBM with nuclear weapons. It's headed towards the United States, the continental United States. He wants a redundancy factor that we have 10, 20, 30, even 40 shots from space at this weapon to take it out. In other words, you have the THAAD anti-missile defense system now. You've got the Israeli system that's on the ground. It's done a really good job for them in keeping the Israelis safe, but it's probably got to be a lot more advanced. If you go to a space-based defense system and, let's say, a laser type of system that could explode it in the atmosphere, depending at what point in its trip that it got shot down, what would happen or what could happen?
Well, if they succeed in the detonation, you can shoot it down at various levels and it won't actually happen. And I should add that they could detonate this from a satellite. North Korea has a KSM satellite that flies over the middle of the U.S. pretty much every 12 hours. We don't know what's in that thing. I'm sure there's not a nuclear weapon, you know, right now, but there were many things. You know, Sean, 6 months ago, people would have told you and me there's no way North Korea will get ICBMs. Now they have them. If they do successfully do this detonation, it very well could take out all of the electricity grid. And that doesn't just mean our iPhones and our fancy gadgets. It means my son, born premature a couple years ago on a life support machine. Uh-oh, that's going off. Grandma's dialysis machine. Wait a second, go past a few days there. We're talking weeks. The water filtration systems aren't working. Well, we all need water. We can't get clean stuff up. Even the sump pumps in the country, you can't get those going. The regional food terminals. How much food do we actually have stored to feed our cities? Uh-oh, all those things start to spoil. And you start to realize why this can end up looking like, you know, The Walking Dead minus the zombies.
All right, but you've got to admit it's fairly remote, right? I mean, you have, for example, do you ever read any of these magazine pieces or stories about, quote, preppers? I mean, they're always being portrayed as the nuttiest people around. And, you know, I have extra water at my house. I have some extra food at my house, the prepared food like the astronauts eat. I have a big generator at my house. I've taken some preparations, but not for the long term like this.
Well, first of all, to the people who say the odds of it are happening are pretty low, NASA says the odds of a naturally occurring EMP attack happening, a solar flare, is around about 10% per decade. 10% per decade. Okay, well, those aren't very high odds. Well, hold on a second. There are folks buying tickets for the Powerball.
When did NASA say this? I never heard that.
Yeah, they have way less of a choice of winning the lottery, chance of winning the lottery. We take out insurance on our home, even though we know a fire most likely isn't going to happen. But the odd thing about all of this, Sean, is the mitigation strategy for it is really quite simple. There's been a number of statewide initiatives and even a couple federal initiatives that want to bring in legislation and regulation on this. And it's really a two-step thing. One, let's learn a bit more. Because right now, of course, the worst-case scenario is popular because nobody's done any recent research or investigation to really exactly authoritatively tell how bad this thing will be if it will hit. And two, as you're redoing these parts in your various electrical grid systems, put in a regulation that just says as you're replacing those costs over the years, over their life cycle, replace them with EMP-compliant parts. And this is not a tinfoil hat thing, Sean. There are major engineering firms out there which have patents for these types of products. So mitigation is available and surprisingly quite simple.
All right, when we come back, I just want to ask you, based on your knowledge or experience, your study of what an EMP attack is, and people, I bet you some people are hearing this probably for the first time, and they're probably thinking, is this guy real? Can this really happen? And what they should do or what you'd recommend they do? I mean, I want you to send me that NASA report. I'd really like to read that. This is just one of those topics that I read like at 3 a.m. when I can't sleep because I didn't have my pillow. But it's something that I just find a real interest in because it's kind of scary and it's like a novel, but yet it's got some truth and it's rooted in a reality in many, many ways, especially as we become so electronically dependent and especially power grid issues, which is a very scary scenario. And of course, water filtration issues and stuff like that. Stay right there. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we will continue with Anthony Fury. He wrote the book Pulse Attack, the real story behind the secret weapon that can destroy North America.
The final hour of the Sean Hannity Show is up next. Hang on for Sean's conservative solutions.
All right, as we continue with Anthony Furies, with a Toronto Sun columnist, wrote the book Pulse Attack, the real story behind the secret weapon that can destroy North America. And a lot of people haven't even heard about electromagnetic pulse and what it could do. And you mentioned that Russia performed an attack in the past. Where did they do it?
They did it over Kazakhstan when they were then part of the USSR. So, Sean, they were looking at basically testing this out. They weren't really being nefarious about it, you know, trying to blow Kazakhstan to smithereens or anything. But they thought, oh, we'll do a test. We'll do it over this area. And they did it. And they took down a lot of the grid in Kazakhstan. We're talking millions of people who lost power. Part of their power plants actually went down because of it. That was back in the 60s when they hardly knew anything about this technology. So you think if a country like North Korea also wants to just sort of lightly poke around in the same way Russia was doing it, they may have some success.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a pretty scary thing. You say North Korea may already have this capability to perform this type of attack. Why?
Well, basically, it's about how high up you can get the missile. It's a really low kiloton yield that's needed. When you look at the actual arsenal North Korea has right now, the size of their nukes are nothing compared to some of the bigger ones that Russia and the U.S. have in their stockpile. But you really only need the smallest of nuclear detonations to trigger this sort of gamma ray reaction in the atmosphere that sends out this electromagnetic waveform. So the simple fact that they have the nuclear capability, the question is just whether or not they want to detonate it atmospherically or not, or whether they're planning for some sort of ground launch.
You talk about the North America, you talk about Canada, the U.S., et cetera, being vulnerable to this. Is there any work being done to protect the grid, to protect the water, to protect America if such an incident ever occurred?
You know, there are just a handful of politicians in the U.S. advocating for that. As you said earlier, Newt Gingrich is talking about this issue. Yes and no. Sadly, in Canada, there's even much less going on. I've been talking in our parliament buildings to the legislators about it, giving speeches there. And as you know, we're not east-west, you know, Canada and the U.S. when it comes to electricity. We're north-south. There's practically no borders when it comes to the energy industry in North America. So you're looking at the eastern seaboard going out, the western seaboard. There is not much of a mitigation strategy. The only good news I have to tell you, Sean, is that a few years ago, money was released by the White House to harden Cheyenne Mountain, the NORAD facilities where Canada and the U.S. work together to monitor the skies. So they want to protect the military assets, and the military talks about it. I mean, it's no conspiracy theory to the military. They take it quite seriously. The only problem is, great, so we get an EMP attack, military assets are still there, which I guess means they can stop us from being nuked on the ground. But civil society still goes out. People are still without water for weeks or months. So we still got to get civil society on board. And Sean, you know just as much as anyone, politics is downstream from culture, and people just aren't talking about this right now. So they got to get a cultural movement for this.
Yeah, well said. Look, I really appreciate all you're doing. And if people want to get the book, I guess it's on Amazon and in bookstores. And
it's on Amazon. It's at pulseattackbook.com as well.
Yeah, you're not scaring the crap out of people, are you? You're not scaring the living crap out of people. That's the secret behind the weapon that can totally destroy North America. Don't worry, everybody. It's fine. Everything's fine. All right. We really appreciate it. Anthony, thank you.
Coming up next, our final news roundup and information overload hour.
All right, news roundup, information overload hour on the Sean Hannity Show. Many of you have been saying, Hannity, you're not putting enough opposition on the program. Well, we're trying to get out news and information every day that we argue that you don't get elsewhere. Anyway, this is a person that, frankly, has been at times a little rough on me in her columns and whatever else she's tweeting out there. Olivia Nuzzi is with us. Who are you with? You're with the Washington correspondent for New York Magazine, right?
Correct.
Why are you laughing about that? Because you like taking shots at me because you just figure I'm going to bubble and fizz like Alka-Seltzer and fight back.
I think it's fun when you fight back. I don't know why you have to be so sensitive about it.
I'm anything but sensitive, and I honestly don't care at all. You know what most people don't understand about me and Twitter and, like, when I start these little fights with, like, Humpty Dumpty and all those other people, but although he's not really worth my time. But it's just, for me, I'm laughing. For me, it's fun. Like, you just did a big profile on Liberal Joe and Mika. I mean, I think I would argue two of the most unhinged people I've ever met in my life. I thought you were here. By the way, listen, this is their music, The Monkey House. Do you ever hear that?
I did hear it. I actually watched him perform it from the green room on the Colbert Show when he was there.
Oh, so what did you think of them behind the scenes? Are you willing to share that?
Yeah, you know, I thought they're very unusual people. I spent
Define
a couple of
unusual.
Days with them. Well, you know, they're just unusual. I don't know. They fit together in this weird way. It's very difficult for me to imagine them apart and talking to them separately. You know, if the other one wasn't right next to them, they seem like different people. They're very different apart than they are together.
What is that? That's interesting. It almost sounds like, oh, they get relief and now I can be myself when the other one's not around. That's what it sounds like. And I do know couples like that.
There's
a friend of mine that's a radio talk show host and, you know, he's one way when he's around his wife, and when his wife's not around, he's the most irreverent, politically incorrect person in the world. And around her, man, he's buttoned up tight.
Are you talking about yourself?
All right, no, I'm not talking about myself. This is not a biography here. Thank you very much, though, or an autobiography. Go ahead.
They were nice, and I'll give them credit. They were sports. They answered, you know, pretty much everything that I asked. But they have a very, very tightly controlled image, and I almost was never around them if they were not surrounded by PR people and other people from MSNBC. And, you know, in contrast, I interviewed Rachel Maddow for Glamour magazine recently.
By the way, you know what tells me she's the nicest person in the world? Now, I think she's the biggest conspiracy theorist in the country, but, you know, you're allowed to have different opinions than Sean Hannity. I think conservatives are bigger on freedom of speech issues now than liberals are, but Greta Van Susteren swears she's the nicest person on earth.
Yeah, I mean, she was very nice, and, you know, in contrast to Joe and Mika, we did our interview with nobody around.
Right.
There was very little dealing with any PR people to talk to her. And it required basically no gymnastics on my part at all to get her to, you know, agree to talk about
different
things.
I don't get any sense that she cares about fighting other cable hosts.
Nobody cares, you said?
Yeah, I get the sense she doesn't care.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, she's been doing pretty much, her argument is that she's been doing pretty much the same thing on that show for years.
Right.
And just now in the political climate, it just so happens that it's a popular tactic to sort of explain things the way that she does, whether or not you agree with how she explains them or the conclusion she comes to.
Do you agree with me that, you know, for example, over the years, I remember when Bill Maher was back on his politically incorrect days and he ended up getting fired, and it was people like me and Rush Limbaugh and other conservatives that said, don't fire him. And I have been a steady, a steadfast, if you will, supporter of freedom of speech. And I have spoken out repeatedly against, you know, people ask me, you're going to join a boycott against this and a boycott against that? I said no, because ultimately it's like a weapon to try and silence opposition voices. And I'm confident enough as a conservative that if I make a good case, a strong case, that people will be brought over to my side because of the appeals of the argument.
Right. Well, I mean, I agree that it's absurd to, you know, in most cases, to fire people for their opinions or for things that they say. And I think it's, you know, the way that speech is being sort of weaponized right now by the left on college campuses, things like that, I completely disagree with. There was a great Vice episode about this recently, about one college campus where it's just gotten completely out of control. But I don't know if it's like exactly falls along these political lines where everybody on the right is, you know, pro free speech and everybody on the left is against it. I think that people who understand the First Amendment and understand its importance and are intelligent in that way are in favor of freedom of speech, and people who don't have a very sophisticated understanding of it aren't. I don't think it's as simple as saying the left is one way and the right is the other.
So where would you put yourself on the political spectrum?
You know, I just think everyone is an idiot for the most part, and I hate everybody almost equally. I mean, we've talked about it before.
So, like, you're calling me an idiot. Is that what you're saying?
No, but I mean, I think, you know, I don't agree with any party completely. I don't vote in presidential
elections.
But
you watch my show at times and you say, that guy makes a lot of sense.
And sometimes I say, well, he's making no sense at all, which is, you know, why we've gotten into debates before on Twitter. And
oh, you get into a one-sided debate, but that's okay.
Oh, please. You went on a whole rant against me when I was at a different publication.
I don't even remember. Now, all right, but you have a... Now, tell us about the background. I remember reading a New York Daily News piece about you and Anthony Weiner, and I guess you were on his campaign, and what happened?
Well, so I was a political columnist when I was in high school in New Jersey, where I grew up, for an alt-weekly. And
you don't
I
sound like
perhaps...
you're from New Jersey. I'm from Long Island, New York. How you doing? I don't, you know...
I think I have like a 90s accent more than I have a geographical accent.
Okay.
But I thought perhaps I wanted to be a speechwriter. And, you know, I was writing this column and I ran out of ideas because I ran out of opinions because I was, you know, 18. And I thought I should get some political experience. And I thought it would be very funny to be a communications intern on the Anthony Weiner campaign because, you know, where could you learn more about communications than on something like that, right? It was going to be insane and probably a disaster no matter what. And I was shocked when they agreed to let me intern for them because I said in my application that I wanted to be a journalist and I wrote for different publications and I thought that they might be too smart to agree to that. But it turned out that they were not smart at all and they let me come onto the campaign. And I was there for about a month and I, you know, I was a terrible intern. I like hardly ever showed up. And I, you know, I never did what I was supposed to do. And then when it started to fall apart, I wrote about it for a magazine I was working for called Not Safe for Work Corp. And then the Daily News asked me to write a follow-up. And they ended up putting me on the cover of the paper without my knowledge. And it turned into
That's baptism by fire. That's got to be pretty rewarding, all right?
Well, I mean, initially I was very upset to be on the cover because it looked like I had sold my story. It looked like I didn't write the story myself. And it looked like, you know, I just thought it looked bad. It looked like they had photographed me and I was trying to be this tabloid personality, which is not what I was trying to do. But you have to understand, when I was growing up, my dad would always bring home the New York Post and the Daily News every day. And comparatively, the Daily News seems like a very serious, sort of calm publication.
No, it's a very liberal newspaper, and it's gotten more liberal over the years. You know, I used to deliver the New York Daily News in the morning before I went to school.
Really?
I delivered Newsday when I was 8 years old. I delivered the Long Island Press when I was like 10, and I delivered a lot of papers before I got a promotion to a dishwasher by hand in a restaurant at 12 years old.
Nowadays, you could never do that. You'd have to have a chaperone trailing you on your bike.
That's you know, the cool part, though, is I was 12 years old, and I'd work till 2 or 3 in the morning, and at 13, I became a cook, 14, 15, a busboy, waiter, bartender, then I went into construction for 10 years, but... When I was 12 years old and I'd finish working at 2 or 3 in the morning, I mean, imagine riding home on your bike at 2 or 3 in the morning in these days. But, you know, I'd literally have one or two St. Pauli girls and I'd be flying home, literally. I mean, you know, and meanwhile, my kids have never been out of somebody's sight at any point in their lives.
Are you a helicopter parent?
Well, I can't be because I work too much, but I try and helicopter. Yeah, I actually do to a certain extent. I'm not going to lie, which
You're
is funny.
You're the problem.
What?
You're part of the problem then.
Well, well, how am I the problem? Listen, you can't. This is such a different day and age, and you're in a different generation than I am, anyway.
Yeah,
but I mean,
I don't have
just,
kids. I can't talk about this at all.
That's ridiculous. People used to say that to me because I used to always say I'm never going to hit my kids. And by the way, you don't have to hit your kids. I don't hit my kids. I never hit them either. You just take away their iPhone or their iPad or their PlayStation or their Xbox, and you get full compliance within seconds. It totally works.
Maybe we should try that with North Korea.
Well, just what? We're going to take away Kim Jong-un's what? His ability to kill his cousins and brothers and stepsisters or whatever?
I don't know. Take away his toys. Take away his ability to play basketball or something.
With Dennis Rodman?
Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, I've been saying I don't think there's any good options here. And I can play you the tape of Bill Clinton when he made this deal and he tried to bribe Kim Jong-il, his father. And, you know, he told the American people, this is a good deal for the American people. Some hell of a good deal trying to blackmail a rogue dictatorship out of building nuclear weapons. I think Obama just made the same mistake with Iran, and we'll be dealing with that in a few years.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would never, you know, purport to have any special insight into what we should do militarily with North Korea, but I do
think... Why are you ducking the question? What, do you see any good options?
I don't know what the option would be. I'm a 24-year-old writer. No one's coming to me for advice about what to do with North Korea.
Well, I never got on the front page of the Daily News, to knock on wood. All right, stay right there. We'll continue. Olivia Nuzzi is with us, and she has taken horrible, mean, awful shots at me on Twitter, and she's a Washington correspondent for New York Magazine. We'll give her the final word when we get back. I want to remind you... We continue. Your calls are coming up next half hour. Toll free 800-941. Sean, you want to be a part of the program. Olivia Nuzzi is with us, and she is with the Washington correspondent for New York Magazine. You want to take back any of the awful things you said about me on Twitter?
No, thank you.
So you stand by them all? Is that what you're saying? Is that I want to stand
by?
You know, here I am. I'm trying to offer like alternative voices on the program, and then you just, and I'm being nice, and that's the thanks I get. Great.
I don't remember what I said, but I stand by whatever it was.
Oh, have you ever gone back on your opinion? Have you ever thought one thing and then said I was dead wrong? Because I have.
Of course, yeah. All the time.
You know what the biggest case was?
Like when the facts change, you change your mind, right? There's just that old saying. So all the time I'm you know, evolving on what I think about things.
You know, everyone says that if you have opinions, you never or have an open mind. It's so not true. One of the bigger cases, remember the Elian Gonzalez case? And they went into this young kid and they dragged him back to Fidel. You know, part of me was thinking, all right, well, he's got a father. The father has rights, too, and probably the father misses his son, et cetera, et cetera. And then I interviewed this woman who wrote a book, The Kids from Pedro Pond. And when I read it and I talked to her, she convinced me that, well, okay, yeah, he's going to be with his father, but he's going to be an indoctrinated robot by the end of the process. And he's going to be basically a propaganda tool for Fidel, which he became. And so I switched my opinion. Don't you think that people should have more open minds? Don't you think it's more bitter than it's ever been? Do you like it or not like it?
Do I like the current state of things, like
yeah,
the climate
do you like the
and
environment?
The country? Well, I mean, obviously it's a very interesting time to be a journalist, but it's impossible to say anything, basically, without people ripping your head off. I mean, when it comes to, you know, it's like last week I was a liberal shill, according to my critics, because of the cover story about Joe and Mika. This week I interviewed somebody who was formerly with the alt-right, and now I'm, you know, a Nazi propagandist, according to my
critics. I don't even know what
basically.
Alt-right means. Can you tell me? Because it's a new term, relatively. What is it?
Well, the alt-right, I mean, initially the term was defined on Breitbart, actually, you know, as being just an alternative to the conservative establishment. just, you know, an alternative right, basically, exactly what the title says. But over the last year or over the last year and a half, it sort of became synonymous with white nationalism as people like Richard Spencer latched onto it. And then you see people distancing themselves from it. So Milo distanced himself from it. Mike Cernovich, who I interviewed this week.
And, I resent as a conservative, every election year, every 4 years, we're racist, sexist, misogynistic, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic. I resent it because I am I'm a Reagan conservative. I still am. And I think Trump is far more than people ever give him credit for. And I can go over policy details at another time. And every election year, that's the playbook of the Democrats. Every 4 years, I'm sick of it.
Well, I don't remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't remember there being Mitt Romney rallies where skinheads showed up.
Wait a minute. Mitt Romney was accused because he had women's resumes and a binder of being a sexist. I'm like, he wants to hire
insane.
People. Huh?
To think about that today, that he got in trouble for saying that he wanted to hire
it's
women,
ridiculous.
Basically, is completely ridiculous, especially given what, you know, politicians can get away with in 2017.
Yeah,
it's completely ridiculous. But, I mean, to that point, though, you can't say anything now, basically, without people screaming at you from one side or the other. And oftentimes, you know, I don't think that it's just
the
rules, but oftentimes it is from the left.
That's so true. If the sun rises and the sun sets, there's going to be a boycott Fire Hannity campaign. I get it. All right,
no,
Olivia,
true.
Thank you. God bless you. Have a great weekend.
Thank
and thanks for being on the program. I hope you'll come back.
Thanks
when we come back,
me.
Wide open telephones on this Friday, 800-941-SHAWN is our number.
Covers the real truth about the politics of D.C. He's your watchdog on Big Brother every day. Hannity is on right now.
All right, 25 till the top of the hour. All right, it's Friday. It's time to put your party light on. I can't tell you how many people comment to me how much fun Florida Georgia Line is, how they all become fans, and how they look forward to just saying, oh. Because all of these weeks are hard. None of them are easy. It's amazing. Anyway, time to put your party light on and fire a few bullets at the moon and have some fun.
Hammer and a nail, stacking them bales. I'm dog tired by the 5 o'clock hour, but I'm ready to raise some hay.
This life I live, it might not be for you, but it's for me though. This is how we roll. hurricane and the sky fall to only bring the rain. I sat in darkness, all brokenhearted. I couldn't find a day, I didn't feel alone. I never meant to cry, started losing hope. But somehow, baby, you broke through and saved me. You're an angel, tell me you're never leaving. Cause you're the first thing I know I can believe. Nights, you're the riverbank where I was baptized, cleansed from the demons that were killing my freedom. Let me lay it down, give me to ya, get you singing, babe. Hallelujah. We'll be touching heaven. You're an angel, tell me you're never leaving. Cause you're the first thing I know. Can't believe.
Makes you feel good on a Friday. 800-941-SHAWN. Toll-free telephone number. As promised, let's get to our busy phones. We'll say hi to Tracy, liberal, North Korea. Wants to talk about that from Katy, Texas. What's up there, Tracy? How are you doing down in Texas? What is a liberal doing down in Texas? You know, your vote is canceling out the vote of all those good people that are keeping Texas, you know, free and a constitutional republic.
Wait, Sean, if you can hear me clearly, I'm not a liberal. I'm more of an independent. So that I got to – you're casting me for people to be negative. But
it says that on my screen. So my call screener, who's rarely wrong, says that. Let's give you a little –
Well, no, you've always cast me as that, and I understand it. But
well,
I
you voted for Obama look, how many times? How many times did you vote for Obama?
I want to address you and then about Trump and North Korea.
Right. How many times did you vote for Obama?
Well, listen, yeah, I did vote for Obama, but that doesn't make me a liberal. Just
how many did you vote for Hillary or Trump?
Hillary.
Okay.
Because Trump
you're a liberal.
Is what he is, a disaster right now. So I would have betted I would have did better. But say, when it comes to North Korea, yeah. I have to admit this. I am somewhat on board with Trump's position because, as far as I'm concerned, North Korea is doing like a high school kid. You know, you don't want to be picked on, so you go up to the biggest guy or the biggest bully and you try to fight him. North Korea knows it couldn't stand a chance against it to get popularity by talking against America. But I do take Donald Trump's position. Because America needs respect. You don't just talk about destroying America. We're too big for that. Russia don't do it. They have respect, and they're much bigger than in North Korea. China don't do it. Pakistan don't do it. So you do have to give United States its respect, and that's the reason why I will go with Trump.
You know, you don't threaten because of issues involving respect. I mean, it's sort of like there's a bar fight with two guys, and somebody says, well, that person disrespected me.
I'm from the streets. You don't go threatening people. Because as soon as you threaten somebody, you might get something you can't handle. A person who's smart don't threat. You do, but
listen,
you don't threaten.
There's nobody. I'm a person that is trained in very, very violent street martial arts for 6 years. I've had a concealed carry permit my entire life. Do you know what the last thing I'm ever gonna do is? I'm gonna walk away any time I can, and I'll take any name.
But Sean, I want to say this about you, and I got to address you. You gonna let me address you on some issues?
Okay. So you want to slam me, and you want me to be quiet as you do it? Go ahead.
Well, no. Here's the thing that worries me, Sean. For me, when I'm looking at our politics lately, I've been noticing what's right is not wrong, and what's wrong is not right. But you is my wonder. I know that you're close to Trump. Yeah, you love this ability to get the presidential interview, and you got, you know, you're there. But my thing is this. I'm wondering, when are you going to call him out? I saw you as a part of his propaganda arm when you did this Mark Rich story, and then y'all got burned on that. And then you don't talk about the Trump son-in-law being a back channel. You don't talk about Trump Jr. trying to set up something. You classified it as fake news, but you and I both know a lot of those things did transpire. Manafort under investigation, Michael Flynn under investigation, everybody talking to the Russians. But you act as if nothing's there, like it is a nothing burger, when in fact, if you really slow down, even in the back of your mind, you have to question Trump. But you don't question Trump. And I feel you let your listeners down, because every single day, it's something Trump is being wrong. Just like when it was Obama, every single thing he did was wrong. Everything Trump does can't be right. And when are you going to really be a challenge?
All right, now you're repeating yourself. I've taken your criticism and to heart, and I've given you a fair shot. Let me answer your question. I support the agenda. He has not wavered. He's not changed. He's not a different person. He said the same thing in West Virginia that he was saying out on the campaign trail. I was out on the campaign trail with him. And nobody's perfect, and everybody makes mistakes. And I would argue that at times politically, the president, you know, has had to learn on the job. But he's not, as Mitch McConnell's right in the sense he's not a professional politician. I actually view that as a plus. What I like about Donald Trump is it's not about what you suggest. It's not about access. It's not about knowing the person or the personality at all. Although I've known him for a couple of decades, and I do like him. I happen to be fond of him, and I love the fact that he's courageous and strong, and I thought we saw that yesterday. I love the resolve that he showed yesterday by calling out the Republican Party to keep their promises. But when he talks about the forgotten men and women, which he related to, I identify with the forgotten man and woman. But all those people out of work in poverty on food stamps that can't buy a house, all of those Americans left behind, and I see him ending Obama-era regulations so we can be energy independent, good for national security, and it'll create millions of high-paying career jobs, I support it. When he talks about middle-class tax cuts, I support it. When he talks about corporate tax cuts so we get jobs in manufacturing centers and factories built, I support it. When he talks about repatriation of trillions from multinationals, I support it. When he talks about building the wall for our safety and security so people don't steal our jobs, I support it. When he talks about free and fair trade, I support it. When he talks about identifying evil, ISIS, in our time and not being so politically incorrect, I support it. And the evidence that I believed all of these things long before Donald Trump ever got into politics, and I'll put it back up on my website if you'd like. But go look at I put it up in 2013, talked about it in 2013, and I've talked about it, frankly, my entire career. Everything I just mentioned to you is what a Reagan Republican would do. Everything I just mentioned to you is what I've always believed in. And my agenda leading up to the Conservative Solution Caucus in 2014 is the same one. And I'm going to be honest. I really don't care. I've been to the White House during the Bush years. I've interviewed presidents, secretaries of state, defense, and the likes and candidates my whole life. That's not what motivates me. What motivates me is I see 50 million of our fellow Americans on food stamps, 50 million in poverty. Obama put 13 more million on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty. He doubled the national debt. He gave us the lowest job participation rate since the 70s. And the worst recovery since the 40s and the lowest home ownership rate in 51 years. So if you're asking what motivates me, it's not access. It's not Sean Hannity. It's not money, because when I started in radio, I didn't make any money. I worked for free. And then I worked for little and no money. And I took a huge pay cut. And I never thought I'd be successful, to be blunt. So, you know, if you can make these accusations, and it's I guess maybe from your side, that's how you see it. But if you really know me, if you've listened to me over these many, many years I've been on radio, it's like my 30th year, then you know it's total baloney, because I've been saying these things for my entire career, just with different news and different sources and different information every day as I get smarter, hopefully, wiser, hopefully, and as I see things a little bit better and brighter as I get older and more a little bit more insightful with a little bit more life experience. So, you know, I can't convince you that this is true, but there's evidence empirical evidence that proves what I'm saying is true. I'll give you the last word to refute that. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's not that, Sean. The main thing is this. Trump is a front. I call him Trump Shady. He fronts.
And good grief.
Just like the Trump University, Trump has promised everything bigly. It's good. And he's been fronting. He'll tell you. Like you said, he's made these statements.
I don't have a lot of time. Listen, there is so much evidence of success. We now have 1 million jobs. We now have fewer people on food stamps than in the last 7 years. We have more economic growth than anybody ever imagined. Obama never got to 3% GDP in all the years he was president. If he ever gets his agenda done, which I put on the Republican Party shoulder in Congress, if he ever gets that done, I predict, like in the Reagan years, we're going to have an economic boom and jobs created. And I like that he's tough on national security. Short of that, personalities don't matter a whole lot to me in politics. Truth, fidelity to promises, a vision, principles that guide you. Well, I've seen a president that hasn't wavered since the campaign, and I was out there with it. But I can't convince you. Look, you're going to believe what you're going to believe. It is what it is. And I accept that there's a lot of people that think this is very different than what reality is, but I'm never going to be able to convince you otherwise, so I'm not going to try. I'm just going to explain it to those people that do have an open mind to hear it. All right, have a great weekend. Appreciate it. Thank you, Tracy. 800-941-SHAWN, our number. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today, for this week, and let not your heart be troubled. We'll be back on Monday. You know, I don't think this news cycle is ever going to slow down. It just is insane. We'll be watching very closely, monitoring very closely all of the events coming out of North Korea. We'll be monitoring very closely whether or not Republicans can get their act together. We'll have a lot more on all of these issues on Monday. I assume the president will make news this weekend, considering he's not on vacation. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you back here Monday, and hope you get some rest.